You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
So we have Benjamin Bradley, an interior designer in New York City. He recently got his own Netflix show where he helps people design for the holidays. A fun fact, Ben actually grew up in the same town that I live in. So I'm so excited to have this talk. Hi, Ben.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. So would you like to start out by explaining how you got to where you are as an interior designer?
Sure. Kind of a jagged road, as a lot of life journeys, I guess, are. I went to Purdue University basically because I wanted to make it to New York. My parents didn't think I should go to New York directly out of high school. So I found that they had an exchange program with FIT, but that was for fashion design. But I figured, you know, that was a way to get to New York. So I went to FIT. I did a Purdue FIT sort of associate program, bachelor's degree scenario, and then finally moved to New York, but wasn't really too interested in fashion at that point. I had seen Seventh Avenue and I thought, oh God, I don't know if I want to work on Seventh Avenue. So I took a job at a major retailer here in the city, and I met my then business partner, and we began an interior design firm that lasted 22 years. Then I broke out on my own and have always, throughout this entire journey, Christmas has always been my safe place, my happy place. And that just sort of, I started to really embrace that whole thing. And that just started to really come to fruition in the last few years. And a friend of mine who is a television movie producer came to me and said, hey, you do Christmas better than anyone that I know. Let's do something. So that's how the show came about. So that's sort of an abbreviated version of a strange journey from Boonville, Indiana.
So how did you start out like loving Christmas, and how did that come to be where that's your thing now?
You know, it just literally, it has always been my thing. Even from the smallest, the earliest memories from being the smallest child, I have loved it from the get-go. And my parents always made Christmas really special. They made all holidays special. It was something to look forward to, lots of friends, lots of family, lots of decorating, things like that. But I think I knew or recognized early on as a child even that there was just a different feeling about the holiday. There was a different feeling about that time of the year. It was kinder. It was nicer. It was happier. It was, you know, and then of course there were presents and Santa Claus and all of that stuff. But it was really just that I think as a young kid, I recognized that. And being a sensitive kid, I guess, I just decided that that was a really wonderful thing. And I was going to try and live in that arena as much as I could. So anyway, well, like I said, it's been always been my safe place, my happy place. Whenever I can't sleep, that's what I think of. And, you know, so it's just always been my thing.
It truly is a magical time.
It is. It is.
What was production like on your show?
Well, this was all new to me. Not so new to you, I know, but new to me. I had not, when my friend came to me and said, let's do a sizzle reel, I didn't even know what a sizzle reel was. So production was very fast. We literally started filming in October, and we filmed right up to November 22nd, and we went basically 6 days on, one day off kind of thing. We did some time in the workshop on our days off where we would sort of create some of the things, but for the most part, everything was filmed. Everything was pretty much on film. And so, you know, it is unscripted television. I mean, other than the portions of where I'm sitting and sort of trying to thread the story together in sort of an interview fashion, everything else you see is truly real and unprompted and unscripted and just kind of me. So, it was a relatively small crew. There were three cameramen, a couple of executive assistants, a couple of crafts people, creative people, but yeah, it was a pretty small crew. I mean, we all sort of just, everybody chipped in. Everybody did what they needed to do to get it done, because the time frame was the real, most real part of the entire show.
What do you wish people knew about your job as an interior designer and on production and stuff like that?
You know, so oftentimes people say, oh, it must be fun to shop for people. Well, it's so little of that and so much more psychology in both of these elements, whether it was a television show or my real life as an interior designer. There's a lot of figuring out who the people are. There's a lot of questions to be asked. There's a lot of listening to be done, likes, dislikes, things that trigger them, things that really inspire them. So there's a whole lot of that. Then there is the creative part, which is what I love. It's exciting to get a job and to kind of formulate the concept for the job. Then I always say there's about 9 months of, you know, a lot of handholding and paperwork and processing and stuff like that. And then there is sort of the end of the job, which has the installation where you actually get to see this vision that you've been holding in your head and you've been trying to relay to the client for 9 months. You actually get to see it come to life. And so I think that's something that people don't realize, one, the time that it takes. And, you know, you look at the most beautiful rooms and you think it just shouldn't be very hard. It looks like it's effortless sort of thing. But there is a lot of effort that goes into creating a beautiful home, and particularly nowadays, because technology has added a whole nother level of complication to these smart homes. And, you know, as an interior designer, we're not just about sofas and drapes. You know, we want to figure out that, you know, things are concealed in the right way, outlets are in the correct places, all that type of stuff. So yeah, it's a lot more involved than what I think people think it is.
So what goes through your mind when you're designing? Like, what do you take into account, and what can make or break a design, or how do you not let yourself into it too much? What all goes into that?
You know, I always try to remind myself and the client as well, it is their home. It is not my home. And so it should definitely be a reflection of them. That being said, there are always things that I personally bring to a job. I always tend to like a sense of warmth. I like, I like a home that is sort of timeless. It isn't particularly extremely modern, but isn't also grandmotherly traditional. So whether it is if I'm working on a contemporary project, which I just finished, you know, there is still a great sense of warmth. There's lots of textures and layers to my projects. But I think the thing that I find the most interesting, where I think the creativity really comes into play, is, you know, most people could come up with something given an open checkbook and a blank page, come up with something really interesting and probably beautiful. I think it's when the client actually starts to have input that, you know, you've designed this idea based on what you've talked about. I always say, you know, there's a lot of programming with the client. But, you know, you come up with your idea and then you present it to the client and you say, oh, this is. And then they say, oh, but I hate blue. Or, oh, I had this desk that was my grandmother's that I just have to use. And I think that's when the creativity comes in, because then you have to step back outside of your head, outside of your ego, and you have to look at it and go, okay, she doesn't like blue, but we can do green. And that desk, if we did this to it, or if we hung that over it, or if we put this lamp on it, we could sort of meld it into. I think that's where the creativity comes in, because I think anybody given no boundaries can create something wonderful. But it's when the boundaries start to be placed that the creativity really has to kick in. You have to come up with something that is satisfying for them as well as yourself professionally.
Do you think that growing up in a small town made it any more difficult to getting where you are?
I don't believe it made it more difficult for me to get where I am. I think growing up in a small town, you have to make more sacrifices in order to get someplace where you might want to be if it is not that small town. I mean, that small town works for many people. For myself, being a gay man, it just didn't work for me. And I love coming back. My entire family is still there. A lot of friends are still there, but no, I think you have to sacrifice. I think, you know, I had to move halfway across the country in order to find a place where I felt it was good for me. And I also know too, that for the aspirations that I had for myself, the opportunities were just not going to be in a small town like Boonville. There were wonderful people there and there are wonderful jobs and opportunities in other fields. But for my creative field, for my interior design work, for anything that I thought was interesting or what I wanted to do, I wasn't going to find it there. So, it was a necessity. So I don't think it made it difficult to grow up there. I just think it made it a necessity to move from there. So,
praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SuffsMusical.com.
Are you finding as much joy this Christmas season as you have years past due to all the stuff going on in the world?
Really good, interesting question, particularly on this day, because I woke up on this day today with, you know, Christmas Eve being just a few hours away. I looked around today and I thought, it looks like Christmas, but it doesn't particularly feel like Christmas, because so much of what is Christmas is friends and family. And being that we really can't safely gather this year, that's a big element that's missing. So yeah, I find it, I still find tremendous joy in decorating. But yeah, this is a strange year, because like I haven't baked a single cookie, and you know, we'll create a Christmas dinner tomorrow night, but it will be for the two of us and the dog. And so yeah, it's been a little harder to, we have a new home, and so that's made it a little bit more of a distraction. But yes, I think for the most part, it's been a little bit harder to find the Christmas spirit.
What's the best advice you've gotten?
Oh, well, way, way, way back in college, I was not doing well in my economics class. And in fact, I totally did not pass it when I was at Purdue. So I had to take it at summer school at USI. And I was still not doing well in it, because I just, even to this day, I don't balance my checkbook. I don't get the whole thing. But I literally went to the professor and I said, look, I will do anything. I just have to have a C in this class. And he looked at me and he said, never say that again in your entire life, that you will do anything to get something out of it. And that literally, you know, 35, 40 years later has really like stuck with me. Other than that, I think the best advice I ever got professionally was to listen. You know, I think coming from a small town and landing where I did and dealing with some of the people that I deal with and stuff, it was really important that I listen and listen well and not necessarily always talk, and then also sort of learn from what I am hearing, you know, really taking what I'm hearing. And that comes to how do certain people live, or, you know, what is the etiquette of some type of situation I might have found myself in that I wouldn't have in Boonville or whatever. I think listening is a really key element to this life. So that would be my other thing that somebody told me to pay attention to.
So what's the biggest obstacle you have faced in your career?
You know what? Probably myself. Not to sound so psychologically whatever, but, you know, I mean, because of the move to New York, there are opportunities. I think we all have the chance. I think opportunities come everybody's way. Some are greater than others. Some people have the ability to be in a situation to where an opportunity comes by where others might not. But I think many of us bypass those opportunities because we don't recognize them, or we have too much fear to actually act upon them. And I think when I say I was probably my biggest obstacle, I often wonder if I would have had more self-confidence as a younger person, if I would have had my ego more in place to where I really valued the creativity and what I could actually bring to a project or a job or my career in general. I think I oftentimes wonder where it might have taken me. I'm very grateful and very thankful for having a successful interior design business for, you know, almost 30 years and being able to step in front of the camera and do the show and be on a global platform like that. But, you know, I think, gosh, if I would have started, you know, when I was really young and had, you know, that's why it was so interesting to me that you have been able to accomplish what you've accomplished in your very, very, very few years. So, yeah, I think, you know, I think we ourselves oftentimes are our worst enemies.
Yeah. So I've asked this question to everyone that I've had on my podcast, and I've gotten these really interesting answers. So I want to see where you stand.
Okay.
Do you think that you've benefited more from education or experience?
Good question. I think experience has been probably a bigger role model in my life than education, though as I get older, as I meet more and more successful people, or as I have met successful people throughout my career and my life, either friends or clients or whatever, I really understand the value of education, and not only the education, but the level of education and the exposure that that education gives you, and the exposure that that educational environment gives you to you, the people that you're surrounded by and stuff. You know, it truly is one of those phrases where they say, you know, be careful who you surround yourself with, because that is, you know, who you will aspire to. Or if you are the smartest person in the room, then you are in the wrong room. And I truly do believe that. I think that whether that comes from education or whether that comes from experience, I think you have to constantly pursue bettering yourself as a career, as a person, as a human being. And I think you really have to pay attention to that, because we stagnate and we get really comfortable really early on, which is why the television, the Netflix thing actually ended up coming about, because I, you know, at 52 years old at that point said, okay, I need to challenge myself. And so I made a promise to myself that that year I was going to say yes to everything. And that was something that came along, and I said yes, and it frightened me. But I think being frightened is a really good thing on a lot of levels sometimes. You know, I said earlier that fear held me back in some instances. In other instances, it can be a really good motivator.
So how have you spent your time during quarantine?
Well, you know, my industry got shut down in, I guess, April, mid-April, or maybe actually mid-March. And so there was a couple of months that I did a lot of walking. I was not one of those who, I think actually I was, you know, because it really hit New York hard in the beginning. And it was very traumatic, and I think I truly was almost traumatized by it, because when the field hospital started to crop up a block from us in Central Park, and you know, it just was, you know, and then it was just horrifying. So I was not one of those who immediately jumped in and said, I'm cleaning closets and I'm going to, you know, create the greatest room ever designed and blah, blah, blah. I really sort of shut down myself a little bit. I took lots of walks. I could give you a really wonderful tour of Central Park if ever you needed that, because I now have covered every single inch of Central Park. But yeah, and then my industry opened up again. They started to allow people back into buildings, workmen's, any of the jobs that I was working on at that moment, June 8th. And so, you know, it sort of picked back up from then. I was fortunate that my business sort of, I had a couple of projects that were able to resume. And then of course, all the publicity and stuff for Mr. Christmas started to gear up. And we did actually we did some reshoots for Mr. Christmas in June and July. So that was part of it. But yeah, so it's, you know, it hasn't exactly been slow. It hasn't exactly been as much time of reflection as I would have thought. But, you know, you try and keep yourself busy, because what else are we going to do? It's hard. Otherwise, you just get depressed.
Is there anything you want to add before we end this episode?
You know, I think of anything, my biggest, what I say to my nieces and nephews at this point in my life, particularly, it became very clear with Mr. Christmas and Holiday Home Makeovers, was, you know, it might take you a while. It took me a long time to find my passion, but, you know, just motion creates, it just develops something. And so try not to stagnate, try not to stand still. It doesn't matter if it seems like it's the right move or the wrong move or the right direction or the wrong direction, just move, because that will lead you to something else. And I think that will then lead you to finding your passion and follow your passion, because it wasn't until I fully embraced how much I truly loved Christmas. And I let that out of the bag. I sort of took my cap off and said, hey, here, I love Christmas sort of thing. You know, the people started to call, and the New York Times called and said, hey, we hear you like Christmas. Can you tell us about this? Or, you know, and then the show came along, and you know, you can't just find your passion. And like I said, it may take a while to find it, but, you know, constantly look for it, constantly stay curious, constantly stay in motion, and watch for those signs, watch for those opportunities. And if you can at all muster it up, grab hold of that confidence and take a chance on those opportunities.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, Mason, thank you for reaching out. I'm thrilled to have been able to speak with you. Thank you so much for having me.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit. that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.